your smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod host, Guilty Wilson. Nerd Up.
And welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, and along with me I have...
Eric Billingsley.
Tim Coker.
Tim Mattson.
Sean Smith.
And Sean Smith, what? Yeah, see, there's a new voice here. First of all, I got to remark, before I remark on the new voice, I mean, that's Tim Coker. Holy cow, you're sounding hot.
Yeah, you know, I stopped smoking, and I'm just kidding. I like my new microphone. I got a Yeti microphone, and the first one I ordered was doorstop. It didn't work, so they sent me a new one, and the new one works obviously well. So,
but it was a beautiful doorstop.
Yeah, they're nice looking things, aren't they?
Yes,
they are. They're beautiful.
Yeah. So now you've joined the club. We all four have Yeti microphones by Blue Mics, and we're all. I mean, I'm just telling you, you're really sounding good. So, all right. Now, as for that, let's move on. We got a different voice on the line with us here today, Sean Smith. Now, Sean is the communications director for Indie PopCon, which is coming up June 26th, 27th, and 28th. Did I get those dates right?
Yep, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, I know, real close. I'm going to be there. In fact, Sean, I got to warn you, I'm coming up there with two cosplayers that we're having to leave our area of Illinois at around 5 or 6 in the morning to get there. We're going to have to show up on a Saturday. We're miss out on the Friday stuff. But two cosplayers, one will be the Joker and one's going to be Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. And I'm going to have to drive about 2.5 to 3 hours with these Jokers and Vegeta in my car. So I'm going to get stairs just coming up to the convention center there in Indianapolis. So, Sean, first of all, great to see that the Indie PopCon made it for another time around. Last year was the first one. Last year, we had 4 out of the 5 members of the Nerd Up podcast. You had myself and my son. You had also Tim Mattson and Eric Billingsley. We showed up at last year's Indie PopCon, first one ever for you guys, and it just was phenomenal. We talked for about 4 or 5 episodes afterwards about Indie PopCon. That was last year. This year, took you a while to get announced, but once you got rolling, looks like things are going for you guys. How is the Indie PopCon looking for this year?
It's looking great. You know, we definitely, our first year was very successful, but of course, you know, the first time you do anything, you're going to make some mistakes. So we took a couple lumps, but we are coming back and fixing some issues that we had from last year, just on the logistical side of things. And so far, I mean, the fans are responding. We're getting great ticket numbers, and it looks like it's going to be a great show.
I was worried at first when one of the first guests that were listed was the dress. I was like, wait a minute, it can't be all, please.
We got a little bit of slack for that, which I was kind of surprised about. But I mean, I get it, you know, it was one of the first things we announced, but that was more timing than anything.
Well, true. You did announce it right at the time that was popular. And, you know, I really don't know how that's going to go over, but it's a neat thing to have, just to say that you had it. It was a meme for a while. Now it's kind of faded away, but the dress hasn't faded away. It's still there. But no, what grabbed me from the beginning was immediately Sam Jones. I mean, he's been in the Ted movies, but, you know, of course you know him from as Flash Gordon. And right there is just like, man, that's an icon. I just got to make every effort I can to see him. But Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, you got to go see this guy. Name some of the other stars you got coming in this time around.
Well, we've got John DeLancey, who you will know if you are into Star Trek. He was Q on Star Trek.
Also My Little Pony.
My Little Pony, which is kind of an interesting transition to go from a starship to a talking dragon and My Little Pony. It's arguable, you know, where he has the most male fans, because My Little Pony's been crazy that way.
Yeah, that's true.
We've also got Malcolm Goodwin from iZombie. So that's a kind of a new breakout show this season on CW Network, and they just got renewed for season two. We're also featuring Tony Moore, the original artist behind the Walking Dead comic book series. So, you know, he helped kick off that entire, you know, what is now a mega smash series on TV. He actually did all the artwork for books one through, oh, I'm going to get this wrong, 12, I think.
Okay. We'll go with that.
send all letters about how incorrect I am to carl@indiepopcon.com.
Don't send them. Carl, huh?
And then we also have Troy Baker, who is, we like to consider him the hardest working man in video games, because he actually plays a lot of iconic roles in all the hit video games that are out there. And he is one of only two living actors to have played both the Joker and Batman. So that's an interesting bit of trivia about him. And Edward James Olmos, Battlestar Galactica, the Admiral.
I think you buried the lead there, Sean.
You know, I'm actually...
For me, anyway.
I'm looking at the website, and it's scrolling through them randomly, so that's where this is coming from.
Well, for me, that's another one that I was going to mention, but I wanted you to bring that one up. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Commander Adama. Also from, you know, Miami Vice.
Yeah.
If you really want to go way back. So, yeah. That's one of the ones I have to go meet and, you know, definitely get my picture with him and all that good stuff. Now,
so say we all.
Now, Eric and Eric hopefully will be there, but Eric and I are going to be there from the podcast. What kind of changes can we expect to see this year?
So one of the changes that we're going to be making is last year the configuration was a little bit odd. It was kind of this weird L shape that the celebrities ended up getting kind of lost in the back. So it's a much more straightforward layout. One thing that we loved was that we had the main stage directly connected to the exhibit hall, so all that traffic flow was there, and we're going to do that again. One of our favorite changes, I think, is that the registration hall, which is where, you know, everybody ends up turning in their tickets and waiting for the show to open, is actually the same hall as the main stage.
Oh.
Whenever you come to PopCon, we're actually going to have entertainment on stage while you're waiting for the show to open. So we look forward to it being a full wire-to-wire event where, you know, we're just going to have stuff going on the entire time.
Last year you had several different rooms that the Q&A panels and stuff like that. Is that still going to be going on too?
Absolutely. We actually have every single room on the bottom floor on our side of the hall. So we've got three film screening rooms. We've got three rooms that are dedicated to panels. We've got a huge room that's set up to handle LAN gaming, so League of Legends, Super Smash Brother tournaments. Since you are a fan of Battlestar Galactica, you might be interested to know that we've got the Artemis Space Deck Simulator. We'll be operating out of one of the rooms. So it's an interactive game that creates basically space station computers on each individual laptop. So one person will serve as the gunner, one person's the engineer. Then you've got the captain's console, so he can actually interact and see everything. So you're actually interacting and going through these space missions, and each person has their own individual role. So as you're on these deep space explorations, you know, you'll come across a planet, and maybe your goal is to mine the planet. So you've got to coordinate with the engineer, who's, you know, meanwhile coordinating with the scout team leader who's sending down probes. And so it's really cool. It really gives you kind of the feeling that you're on a space deck and you're actually working with each other.
Sounds kind of like a LAN type of campaign, but everybody has their specialized jobs to do. So
that's one thing that we're trying to do, is we're trying to have a lot of interactive things to do at the show, because some shows, you know, it can feel like you pay ticket price just to go in and pay more ticket prices.
Yeah.
So we want people to come and enjoy and have a lot of things to do, and that's definitely part of that.
At this point, Tim Mattson or Eric Billingsley, since you guys were at last year's Indie PopCon, you guys got any questions, any ideas, anything you want to share?
Oh, just other than we had a ball last year. I regret that I'm not able to come up this year. I feel kind of bad that I'm going to be missing out.
Yeah, I should tell you, Sean, that Tim came all the way from North Carolina just to come last year. So this year things didn't work out right. So.
Well, thanks for coming out last year. I'm sorry you can't make it this year. Yeah. It's going to be even better.
Eric, what did you have a question there?
No, I just wanted to comment that last year was probably the first real con I've ever been to, and I had such a great time and met some of the performers that I really, you know, meeting Candace McClure was awesome. I've been a big fan of hers for a while, and of course Sylvester McCoy and Hodor, but it was the cosplay. I really, really enjoyed all the cosplay, and it was just it was a huge event, and I spent a lot of money and had a really good time.
Yeah, we all spent a lot of money. I'll tell you what, okay, before I got something for you, Sean, but before I got to tell you that one of the aspects of the PopCon last year is, other than one certain celebrity, I'm not mentioning names, so there we'll go, not go there. Anyway, we were just walking through one area of the con. I'm walking around doing interviews for the podcast and for the radio station I also work for. But I was walking around, and I'd lost track of Eric and Tim Mattson. And I come across them, and they're just sitting there gabbing with Candice McClure just out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And what it was is she just happened to be walking by, and she was, and that's what most of the celebrities were. Like, was it Eric, the guy that did the voice for Pokemon and stuff? He was just open, and they were, all the celebrities were just, you know, ready to talk to whoever they wanted to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's partially on purpose in that, you know, whenever we go and we look for our celebrity guests, we don't necessarily want to bring somebody who's just going to sit behind their table and just be completely concerned about autograph fees. And, you know, ultimately they're there to make some money, but we also want them to be there to interact with fans, to engage with fans. So we ask them to participate in the live podcast stage that mm-hmm. we've got going on. We, you know, we ask them to go and hang out with the game developers and ultimately enjoy the show as much as they can. And you know, we were very successful in that last year. We had some great guests, and this year we hope it's no different.
Sounds yeah, like actually movie. That was you mentioned the guests interacting with all the other different areas. Joel Hodgson was kind of a touchstone last year. He was, you know, I had my picture taken with him. He was in the Q&A panels. He had his own specific presentations they did, I think, twice over the weekend. He was out on the tables all the time, and then he came in. They did that. He did the performance with who was it? The musical act last year.
Paul and Storm.
And they did that whole show together. It was awesome. I mean, you know, Joel Hodgson was really, for me, the touchstone of that whole weekend.
Yeah, we actually were his first convention ever. So.
Really?
You know, he had attended Dragon Con, and I think, you know, he'd gone as just an attendee, or maybe he was invited out as a panelist. But, you know, this was the first time that he actually did autographs and signings. We saw him at Cincinnati Horror Hound, and he came up and he gave us a big handshake and said thanks for kind of popping his con cherry, so to speak. And, you know, he's a wonderful human being who also happens to be famous.
That's
what we look for. You know, we really want people that, you know, are almost surprised that all these people want to hang out with them. We don't want people that have been jaded by a little bit too much celebrity and fame.
Now, that leads me to a couple of questions here. First of all, last year you guys had the after party on Saturday night, and Eric went to that. Came back pretty hammered, by the way. But anyway, they're going to be another one of those little after parties? Basically, all the celebrities and the VIPs, they all got in on this thing and just had a blast. Was it, you guys?
Yeah, we actually just finalized details on that, so I can go ahead and share those with you.
Sure.
We are going to be changing venues, so we're not going to be at Sensu again. That ended up changing to something else. But we actually are taking over an entire building. We've got Joker's Comedy Club, Taps and Dolls, and Skybar that are all participating as the official PopCon after party on Saturday night. It's going to kick off with a comedy show from Dan Telfor, who you may recognize from Nerd Poker with Brian Posehn and friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
So after we do the comedy club, then we've got a private bar space for some late night pub and grub right mm-hmm. there in Taps and Dolls. And upstairs, we've got the Sky Bar Dance Club. If you thought you got hammered last year, you can definitely get hammered again this year.
Well, see, we're going to try to keep away from that this year. But well,
you can try to keep away from it, but it'll sneak up on
that's
you.
That's true. Well, last year you had Hodor dropping the bass, but so any surprise this year?
You know, we got really lucky. Just, hey, Hodor is also a DJ. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So we don't quite have anything that cool, but we've got some good local acts that we're cool. going to bring in, some DJs, and I believe Five Year Mission will be involved again.
Oh, great. Yeah, those guys are fun.
Yeah, they're awesome. So okay. It'll be a good time all around.
So once again, June 26th, 27th, and 28th kicks off on a Friday night. I will be there early Saturday morning, all the way through close on Saturday. Sunday's iffy for me right now, but like I said, I've got two cosplayers that are coming up with me that are, I'm sure they're going to be the judge of that. For might change my mind. That whole weekend, it's going to be a blast.
We've actually I mean, this year more than ever, especially with the YouTubers we're bringing in. I mean, I've got mothers from Texas calling me talking about how they're making this 14-hour drive. Kids keep yelling at them about whatever a Markiplier is. we're definitely seeing a lot of travel this year.
Yeah. See, Tim Mattson, these YouTubers are famous.
I'm not doubting it.
The people that don't know who they are underestimating exactly what's going to happen, because it is going to be like a boy band fever.
That's a good way to put it.
I've said a long time
by 13-year-old girls in my entire life.
I've said a long time that I think YouTube and the internet are the future of entertainment. Mm-hmm. I really feel like that is where it's at.
Yeah.
Now, I may not understand the draw of the Let's Play YouTubers, but I can't deny that there's a draw.
Well, it's so funny. We're bringing a couple of teens with us along the trip, and they're all talking about Markiplier. I can't think of the guy's name. Lord Dominion 777. I can't think of his real name.
Yep, Wade.
Wade. And they're talking about this guy, and I'm like, I'm going to go see Flash Gordon and Commander Adama. I don't know who you guys are talking about. So, but that's what the really neat thing is about IndiePopCon. You've got something for all ages, every kind of nerd out there, whether it's sci-fi, whatever, television, pop culture of any kind. It's there. So you guys got it covered. Congrats on that. I mean, it's a great way to put a whole bunch of stuff together that at first may seem unrelated, but you guys make it related.
Thank you. Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, that's really what we were hoping would happen, is that the parents would be dragged out for Markiplier, and then they'd say, "Oh, I love Edward James Olmos. So while my kids are in line for Markiplier, let me go hang out with Commander Adama."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's pretty much what's going to happen. All right, so IndiePopCon, once again, June 26, 27, 28. Go to IndiePopCon.com. Get your tickets. We'll have a link also on the NerdUp podcast page. And I'm telling you, it's a great event. It's in Indianapolis, Indiana, if I haven't mentioned that yet. But it's definitely in the middle of America. It's worth coming to. Enjoy the show. So, Sean, thanks for joining us and giving us some more information on IndiePopCon.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. NerdUp Podcast.
Everybody wants cheap airfare, but where do you find it? You call low-cost airlines. Their prices are direct from the airlines, and they're so low you can't find these fares published anywhere. They specialize in cheap flights, discount hotel rooms, cheap car rental rates, and great package deals anywhere around the world. Wherever you want to go, they can help you get there cheaply and with a best price guarantee. If you want the lowest prices on your airline tickets or other travel services, call now. That's right, call. That's the only way to get these rates. Experts are standing by 24/7 to get you the cheapest airfare and hotel rates available. So don't wait. Call right now for the lowest travel prices anywhere and for great last-minute travel deals, too. Call right now. 800-708-3091. 800-708-3091. 800-708-3091. That's 800-708-3091.
Can't wait to see what these guys have to say about the Daredevil TV series, and we might be able to talk about a little bit about Flash, or the Flash, I should say, TV series. You guys ready to jump in on this?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I got to tell you, I mainlined the entire series of Daredevil in the last 2 days.
Mainline.
Wow.
Yeah. That's dedication.
And also, hardcore indeed, because I also did half of The Flash. I did not make it all the way through.
Yeah, I didn't make it all the way through The Flash. I got 2 episodes left of Daredevil to go through. That's okay. I'm going to listen to you guys, and I'll be ready for it. And I've heard the last 2 episodes are really cool.
I got to say, though, I think you've seen the best of the series.
Oh, is that right? I haven't been let down. Let's go ahead and start talking about Daredevil. I was totally shocked when it came on. First of all, we were talking just about how YouTube and the internet's going to be the big thing. Netflix is what this is based on. This is Netflix Communications have put this together to create the series, and they're going to do 2 more Marvel series. And I have been just
3.
Is it 3 more?
4. 5, 6,
4,
7.
Yeah, 4.
Yeah, don't stop. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, Luke Cage.
Do I hear 5?
Okay, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones,
Iron Fist.
Okay.
And the Defenders.
Oh, forgot about the Defenders. That's right. That's coming up.
And on top of that, they've added a second season of Daredevil.
Right.
Yeah, well, they should.
have you heard who is going to be joining the second season of Daredevil?
No.
Oh, yeah.
The Punisher.
Oh, that's right. And they're getting Shane from Walking
Dead. John Barenthal.
Yeah, John, yeah. Who was at last year's Indie PopCon, Eric.
Yes,
we missed
he was.
It. Yeah,
yes,
so,
he was. Yeah.
Or not Indie PopCon. He was at Horror Hound. That's what it was.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. One of those cons we went to. Isaac's been talking about him as Punisher. He goes, no, you know, really? You couldn't pick a better person to be Punisher. He's got the looks, plus he's got that revenge look on his face, like
yeah.
he did in Walking Dead.
He's a scary-looking dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I
he
can
is
see
a scary-looking dude,
yeah.
Now
that's Frank Castle.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm ready for that. That Isaac's been hyping on that one lately. In fact,
hey, Punisher sidebar really quick.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen the 2003 or 2004 or whatever Punisher movie with Thomas Jane?
Yes.
Yes. It was very good.
Okay. Because I had never seen it and I thought I'd give it a run on Netflix. And pretty much from the beginning, I was just stunned at how terrible almost everything in it is. I'm glad they gave him the black t-shirt with the skull, but I could go on for probably the length of the movie about how bad that movie is. So that might be another conversation for another day.
Yeah.
Coker. Tim Coker, I'm going to need you to go online and I'll need you to find the short called The Punisher. I think it's called Laundry Day.
Dirty Laundry, isn't it?
Dirty Laundry, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I've seen it. I saw it when it came out. That's fantastic. And Thomas Jane
that
is fine. Except for how badly misconceived this interpretation of the character is for the whole script and everything.
Right.
Where, I don't know, I just don't really feel like the Punisher should constantly be on the verge of tears. But
well,
that's just me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, has no, there ever been anyway. A good version of the Punisher in TV or movies? I mean, really. There has not
just
yet.
The YouTube film.
Okay, but yeah, I mean, like so, the first one when Tom, or I'm sorry, when John Travolta was the bad guy, and
that's what I'm talking about.
Is that the one? Okay, yeah. And then you had the one with Dolph Lundgren, and
yeah, where he doesn't even have the skull shirt.
Yeah, and it's like they just not been able to bring him to the screen. So hopefully they'll do it in the Daredevil TV series. So we'll be good with that.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I was not excited to hear that the Punisher was in this because I really do not like that character. I just don't think it translates well. So I'll be really interested to see how they do it because if anybody can do it, it's these guys.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
It seems, and that let's go ahead and jump into the Daredevil review, if you will. I'll start with talking about how I just, from the very first one, I was hooked because immediately you just get this whole Frank Miller feel of that whole Man Without Fear that, I mean, just... It just becomes all dark and gritty, yet still maintains. You know, he doesn't kill people, just like in the comics, because he's got his limits, or not his limits, but his. He doesn't feel the need to kill. You know, in some like maybe a Superman movie or something, where all of a sudden the guy that never kills. They didn't need to change that in this, and they kept to that aspect. But Frank Miller did that too. But he still was dark and gritty, and you understood the hardship that this kid went through to become the Daredevil. And I mean, they explained everything so great. And I will tell you what, Scott Glenn as Stick,
yeah.
Holy
so
cow,
so good.
Now I was first of all, I saw his face. I'm like, oh, he's cool. Hey, he looks like Splinter. And then I'm like, hey, that's Stick. Holy cow! Did you notice that how his face in certain scenes he looked like Splinter from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? I'm like, I mean, and you know that's where that's you know it's based off. Everybody knows, but it's like. They really did that well. But anyway, but yeah, he just pulled the whole not caring and yet still keeping the bracelet. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
So good.
Yeah.
It was a great performance, I have to say.
Yeah. You know, and I don't.
Good complex relationship between those two characters.
Yes, yes. And the whole thing, all the characters in this, they're all well represented by great actors that sometimes, you know, first, like Rosario Dawson, I'm like, we'll see. Okay, Night Nurse is cool. She did it, you know.
I've always liked her.
She was fantastic.
I think she's very strong.
I always thought her more of a comedic type role or one of those, you know, girly movies type roles. Not as a, you know, a hardened nurse, but she pulls it off and she does a great job. So I'm sold. It's like I can see her that from any time now. But any character.
But also,
in this.
Gil, I want to comment on what you said about the, you know, the line drawn where he doesn't kill people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just part of this. I mean, a great deal of the thematic material focuses on that.
Right.
That's like a big deal in this eight episode, you know, story arc is where that line is drawn and the consequences of making that decision.
This is one of the few comic book characters where their religion, their religious beliefs actually plays a large part who they are. Matt Murdock's Catholicism really affects this character and it informs what he does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, starting out the whole series with him in confession, you know, I mean, that right there brings that right in and they're not afraid of that.
And it can be so cliched and corny. You know, that's the thing. Like I am As soon as I saw that they were going to be spending time, you know, in the church talking to this priest, I was really, you know, getting in a defensive crouch, because it's just so often a chance for a writer to just put across the corniest garbage that they come up with.
Yeah.
Or the most obvious observations or the most hackneyed cliches and pretend that it's like the most profound thing. And, you know, you're supposed to take it seriously because it's a guy who wears a purple dress on Sundays saying it. But what was great about this is that I felt like that guy actually did seem wise, and he actually did seem to have useful perspective. You know what I mean? Like, I found their conversations a lot more interesting than these things are usually done in comics. And so I really wanted to praise that aspect of it.
So easily they could have become so cliche, like you said, with this, and yet they basically staggered that line perfectly. They didn't go too cliche, and they didn't get preachy, you know.
If we can veer off the subject just ever so slightly, since we were going to mention The Flash earlier, you can't get two series that are further apart in writing style than Daredevil and The Flash. Man,
or shall we say writing skill.
Oh, man. That whole speech in the pilot episode at the end where Arrow shows up and talks about how the lightning chose him.
Oh my God.
I laughed out loud. It was hilariously bad. But Daredevil, the writing was tight. It didn't really tell us. It showed us.
Yeah.
And that's the strength of the writing.
Yeah, definitely so. And to me, okay, the writing is what makes this whole series work out, but also the actors. For example, another one that just has become a favorite. In fact, when I saw him recently in Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, I just totally got a new love for the guy anyway from this series, but I just fell in love with him again, and when I saw him in Jurassic World, I said, this is going to be good. Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin.
I mean,
I've liked the guy's acting. Back in Men in Black, when he was, what was it, Earl? He was wearing, you know, he was wearing the skin, or was the alien that wore the skin of this guy, and he pulled that off. It was such great acting, such fun, but
yeah,
I never, you know.
Before that, he was in Full Metal Jacket, and that's
iconic
from, is Private Pilot.
And so, but when I saw Men in Black, it's like, oh, he's a comedic actor. Well, then he went on TV after that. So first psychotic, then fun, then TV. He became what was the series he was on?
One of those Dick Wolf shows.
Yeah, with initials in the name. And but anyway, Law and Order. Law and Order, I think. And I was like, oh, he's a cop. Well, now I see him in this, and it's like, this guy is just so versatile, really, when you look down at all his body of work. It's actually very versatile. And as Kingpin, he has brought the comic book version of Kingpin to life for me. The only thing he needs is that white suit and the purple ascot. Even though they joked about it in the series, I think he needs to wear it.
No.
Yes.
Absolutely not. No. I never want to see that purple and white outfit ever.
Well,
although I think he could rock a white dinner jacket, though. Mm-hmm. I would have a problem with him rocking a white dinner jacket. But yeah, the purple ascot's maybe a bit much.
And the orange vest.
Yeah. With the giant diamond on the cane. No. Mm-mm.
Well, don't come Richard's to any PopCon then, because you'll see me cosplaying as that Kingpin.
Oh!
I'm shaving my head this weekend, so.
Wow. Yeah. Are you really?
Yeah.
Really?
That's amazing.
Isaac has worked on me for doing this. He's been looking for what, as he calls, a pimp cane for me. And so,
fantastic.
It's like, it's a must. I have to do it now. And so I'm shaving my head.
Bitch, now I wish I was going. I would go just for that.
Well, see, the only thing holding me back at all is that means I have to shave my mustache and goatee.
Yep.
I have not shaved my mustache since I was 17 years old.
Oh, let's be real, Gil. You came out of the womb with a mustache.
I know. At the time, it was one of those porn mustaches, but
absolutely
no. I take that back. For 4 weeks or 8 weeks of basic training, I had to shave my mustache, so that there was a time period there. That's the only thing that's like, oh God, I gotta shave that. Okay, it'll grow back.
Great.
Give me some Rogaine. I'll put it on my face. I don't know, but yeah, I'm gonna be Kingpin. But anyway,
man, can we talk about how great the editing of this series is?
Yeah,
because
in fact,
I gotta say, I think the choice of shots and the editing of Daredevil was fantastic. Specifically, the fight scenes and the fight choreography it was out of this world, with the exception of the last fight, which was god awful.
You're talking about the last episode?
Yeah. There's the final. I'm trying not to spoil it for you.
Well, you don't have to worry about
the final fight of this.
I've never been spoilers never bother me, but it's like, okay, I haven't seen it yet, but don't tell me it's bad.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, it belongs in a Michael Bay film. That was the worst.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's that bad.
Are you kidding? kidding
yeah,
me?
Yeah, Tim, you got to take that down a notch, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, you guys.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
It's not the high point of the series, granted, but I mean, that's just, that's really kicking it in the dirt. I don't think it deserves that.
I think it 100% deserves
plus you
it
hit
because the first, the let's put it up against that amazing fight choreography in episode 2 in the hallway.
Oh, wow,
and
yes.
And any other time that the Kingpin gets violent. Mm-hmm. And some of the other fights that Daredevil has are really stunning. And the editing really gave the Kingpin so much menace and so much power. The choice of shots and the editing, the way it's cut, really lends a lot of, if you will, weight to the Kingpin's fighting style. But at the end, all those quick cuts, they never lingered on a single moment for more than just a second or two.
Right.
And it's just really that chaotic ADD kind of sensibility. It robbed it of any kind of flow or style whatsoever. I mean, it was terrible.
They do have different directors per episode, don't they? Or is it the same director all the way through?
I think it was different directors.
Yeah, I kind of got that impression. So yeah, I mean, that I think that's responsible for that. But I just don't look at it as harshly as you do, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, the weird thing about that ending fight scene is it's a little bit of a letdown, and I think it's the costume moment too, where they have the big reveal of the costume, and suddenly the whole thing becomes a little more slick, a little more Hollywood, and a little more conventional, you know, a little more like what we're expecting. And I feel like they're trying to show off the costume a little more. And after,
the second he gets that red costume, the series is not as good.
Yeah. Well, they definitely have to work on that, because I think that was a speed bump for a lot of people, was when he puts the costume on, because you have this carefully constructed, realistic tone all the way through. And even though you're ready for him to show up in a super suit at the end, when he does, I got to say, it started to feel a little bit WB, you know? And that's too bad, because like, I actually found the way that he got his costume to be a really great solve, and a way that was seeded earlier and very effectively throughout the show. So it isn't like Peter Parker suddenly being like a master costume designer level,
right?
Seamstress fellow, you know, making his that incredible James Acheson costume, you know, or whatever. But yeah, the way it was lit and everything, it suddenly didn't feel
it
like
was
the same
great,
show.
But can we agree though that he does look like he's wearing a bondage outfit?
I don't know.
Don't tell me it's leather. I haven't seen it yet.
Some of it.
No,
it's not, but I hear you.
I mean, come on, Ben Affleck, that was a bondage person. I mean, that was, you know, that was crazy.
Like you were saying, Tim, they worked so hard to create this realistic take on this character, which was fantastic. And then it really is jarring. That suit is just, it just really takes it to a different level. And I don't know that I was ready to jump to that.
Yeah, they'll have to figure out how to light that and how to shoot it in subsequent episodes so that it doesn't feel as goofy, because it's really a shame, because I kept, you know, honestly, as the show was going on, I had the same feeling that I had like two-thirds of the way through Goodfellas when I saw that at the Village Theater or Varsity Theater in Carbondale on that huge screen they used to have. And I was like, okay, is this really one of the best movies I have ever seen, or am I just getting a world-class big screen seduction job by the visuals and everything, you know? And it was the same thing with Daredevil, where I kind of, as the show went on, I kept going, wait, is this really this as great as I think it is? Because this is great. You know, like I was so unprepared for a superhero TV show to be this good. And I feel like we're spending a lot of time on the small disappointments of the ending, but I wouldn't mind grabbing the wheel and steering onto a sunnier street here, because there's a lot of good to say about the show.
Well, let's one more topic first before you spin this your way, but I want to say, how about that lighting? You guys have been mentioning the lighting here on this one. How about that? I mean, just the use of the, you know, I mean, and you think about it, the yellows and the red lights, they have no, there's no realistic source for those lights, but they work in the scenes that they're in. And there's like, there's scenes that's all lit by yellow. Yeah, there's no source for this light, but the way it's, you know, the set's lit up with the yellow lights, it's like, that works. You know, it really makes it stand out. That lighting, I think, was one aspect of it that, bravo.
Here's my observation about this show. Like, I mean, I could go on for hours talking about the things I liked about this show, but I think the thing that is really the key piece of brilliant inspiration on this show for me, other than they're finally cracking the nut of how do you do a grown-up, gritty, realistic-seeming superhero show, it's But I love the way they put they showed that Matt and Fisk are two sides of the same coin in a way. And the way they did it was something that I'd never considered as a lifelong Daredevil reader. And I think that, you know, it's one of the biggest cliches that, you know, in adversarial fiction, as we can call it, you know, that we are the same, you and I, you know, it's just terrible. And whenever that comes up, I roll my eyes. And like if you look at Arrow, they're constantly making these specious judgments about, oh, you know, well, okay, Arrow's not a good example because he was straight up murdering dudes in the first season. But look at Doctor Who, where they're constantly trying to make Doctor Who and his enemies look like they're basically the same. And in this kind of vain attempt to make the Doctor seem edgier, you know, so they say stupid, unsupportable crap like, you would make a good Dalek. It's like, no, he wouldn't. He's the Doctor, you know. But anyway, the brilliance of this show is, you know, that it took things, it makes sense of giving you the linked origin in a way. Because again, I really rebel when they retcon the villain into the hero's origin. So like, the Joker shoots Batman's parents, or in the last Daredevil movie, Wilson Fisk killed Daredevil's father. Because to me, that is A, lazy as hell, and B, just kind of deterministic and stupid. So what I liked here was just that their stories are kind of mirror images. They both come from these poor fathers with very violent lives. But where Matt's father used violence because it was his way of earning money to look after his responsibilities and look after the son he loved, and how his relationship with his son was always loving. You know, with Fisk, it was the opposite. And his father is all about domination and giving his insecurity just running riot over everybody. And so in a lot of ways, the show is about how each of them live out their father's legacies and the choices they make and the kind of bright line between them. And that's something I really loved, because it's a temptation when they go dark to want to, you know, really push your face in it. And obviously, Man of Steel is the prime suspect for me here. And I feel like on this show, they really pushed your face in how close to the line Matt is getting, but you also understand where that line is. And as you said, Eric, it's a huge part of the show of him studying that line and trying to organically within himself, instead of just being told this is wrong, to kind of, you know, when it gets down to it, this is who he is. And it's just a brilliant definition. And you couldn't do it without the casting. And the casting on the show, so good, right?
Oh, definitely.
Everybody on the show is fantastic.
Absolutely. But now also just on that same topic, though, and this is, you know, you were talking about cliches and tropes that are commonly used in comic book fiction and comic book shows and movies. But there is a trope that exists here between, you know, Matt Murdock and Stick and the priest. They are really are the two fathers, and they are the two ones who are morally informing Matt Murdock, and he is kind of a merging of those two fathers. But like you said, it's not done in an obvious way. It wasn't till after I think I'd watched a few episodes and Stick was introduced, and then I was like, oh, I see what they're doing here. It's not done in an obvious way, but I thought it was worth pointing out that they were able to use that trope but put a new spin on it so that it doesn't feel that familiar.
Well, and it's like you said, it's not two characters just telling you something. You know, in a lesser show, you would get Stick talking about how he feels like he's a father, or Daredevil talking about seeing Stick as a father figure. But instead, you just see him feel these emotions, and it reads so clearly and carries so much more weight than just hearing someone tell you that.
Right.
And can I just say that and I don't know if you guys will agree with me or not on this, but the characters, I'm forgetting the names. It's been too long since I watched the series. His partner, his law partner.
Foggy.
Foggy Bear.
Foggy.
Foggy, right. And the redhead, well, actually she's blonde in this, baby vampire. Karen Page, yes. Those, thank you very much. Those two characters are the closest to real human being characters of any quote unquote sidekicks of any movie that I've seen so far, pretty much. I mean, these people, they're not they don't have any powers, obviously, but they care about the character. The character is, for the most part, at a certain point, starts to become a little more honest with them, which of course causes the huge split between him and Froggy. But it's all believable, and you care. I found myself really caring about these characters of Karen and Foggy. And when we were spending time with them, I really enjoyed those moments as much as I did the ones with Matt Murdock. That is no small feat, because I'm just used to seeing those characters as foils for the superheroes, someone to get out of trouble at every turn, that are incapable of helping themselves. No, they actually help Matt on many occasions. So anyway, I just thought it was worthwhile pointing that out.
No, right with you. And there would be times on the show, like if we hadn't seen what Kieran and Foggy are doing for a while, I'd start to go like, come on, what are Kieran and Foggy up to?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And that is the highest compliment, you know. And Ben Urich, too. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect casting for him.
But now let me just say, this is the only negative thing that I really have to say about the show. And it's not that bad. And it actually may be resolved in the next season. I hope that it is. Kingpin is amazing. As soon as he came on screen and we got spending time with him, I was just like enraptured with watching D'Onofrio in that role. He is absolutely amazing. The only thing that they haven't developed so far that I felt really should have been in the first season is we're very familiar now with Matt Murdock's philosophy, the way that he looks at life and his mission in life. I'm not so sure when it comes to Fisk, because we know that he's passionate. He feels very passionately that he's doing the right thing, but they haven't really formulated what his idea of quote unquote the right thing is. And I'm like, you know, because we've seen the terrible things that he's done. And I'm like, okay, how is he justifying this? What is the end result that he's hoping to attain that justifies all of this blood? I mean, there has to be something there that we can at least on some intellectual level understand what's driving the guy, especially since they've gone to such trouble to tell us what's driving Matt Murdock.
Well, I don't know. Do you mind if I just jump in on this? I actually had been thinking about the same thing. And to me, Fisk's evil is really understandable and his goals are really understandable, because I feel like he is a very relevant supervillain for 2015, for the 21st century, because what he is he's a remorseless plutocrat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a real problem we have. I mean, okay, I'm going to get political here, so conservative viewers listeners, you know, may not agree with me, but I think that right now we have a class of shameless plutocrats in this country that have really convinced themselves that what they are doing is for the best, and all of the economic destruction they wreak, all of the companies they, you know, strip of their assets and shut down, all the people they throw out on the street, all of that is good for the economy because it generates wealth for them. And they feel like if they get rich, everybody's going to be rich. You know what? Yeah. I really don't think that a lot of these people genuinely think that what they're doing is wrong. I think what they've done is talked themselves into believing that their self-enriching schemes are good for everybody, because that's how you sleep at night when you do this, unless you're a sociopath. And I can't believe all these people are really sociopaths. Well, in a way, maybe they are anyway. But Wilson Fisk, to me, is a comic booked up version of the 21st century remorseless plutocrat who constantly says and has even come to believe that what he's doing is for the public good, mm-hmm. when all he's really doing is looking out for himself, you know, and the people who are only the closest to him, and that everybody else just has to get out of his way or do what he says. And so to me, I feel like it's a modern problem, and that's what I looked at it as.
And the fact that he takes it so personally when someone spurns his vision, I mean, really, it crushes him personally, because he really does believe that he's doing the right thing, and that's what's so fascinating about it.
And I'll tell you what, on top of that, one more thing whenever they do crush his vision, the actor, Vincent D'Onofrio, the way he represents that with just simple facial tics, if you will, that is phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, you can tell, it's like, holy crap, there's like an army of people going on in that brain of his that are trying to fix it right now, and yet some of them are being crushed, you know. And the way that guy does for that role is just,
yes,
perfect.
Absolutely. Well, now, something else that... Go ahead.
That's the Marvel Studios magic touch, is that they somehow manage to find just the right actors and they get just the right amount of heart into the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, just like getting really emotionally invested in Karen and Foggy and Ben Urich, you know, even with the Kingpin, you start to understand him, just like Matt Murdock does after he meets Vanessa and sees this and he realizes this isn't as simple as I thought it was.
Right.
And that is the Marvel special magic touch of making these characters relatable. And I don't know, I just, however they're doing it, man, good job.
Speaking of tropes that this particular story managed to spin on its ear is the Kingpin's girlfriend, right? Okay, this is Vanessa. The only time that I can think of where you've got a villainous character who has a girlfriend, wife, or significant other who genuinely believes in him but is not you can't say that she's evil or that she deserves any foul fate. But the fact that he has a quote unquote innocent in his life, that is usually the role given to the hero. You know, you give him people that he has to protect who are weaker than he is, but you've got this vulnerability now built into the villain. And I just, how she's going to figure into leveraging pressure against Kingpin, I think is an interesting scenario.
I got to say, I actually kind of rooted for their relationship a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
totally.
He felt bad on that first date, whenever she had to leave early, and she felt she was mad at him, and everything. He felt bad for him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And he's just such a God. He's so fascinating. I have such a crush on him. But seriously,
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
I read a great column by a guy who was a fan who was autistic, and his column was that he felt like D'Onofrio's Kingpin was extremely heavily autistic coded.
Yeah, I could see that.
They don't say he's autistic on the show, but you know, his difficulty with eye contact with people, mm-hmm. the way his words were often sounded like they were unnatural kind of coming out of him, and he's kind of forcing things out, and or maybe it sounds a little rehearsed or whatever, you know. And when I thought about that, I thought, my God, that is brilliant. If that's what they were going for, what an original take on the character, and what a way. Because he seems crippled inside. When you see him, he's crippled inside. And, you know, so all the way through the show, you see that he's deluding himself that what he's doing is for the good. And there's that moment at the end when I think he suddenly realizes, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
All right, I'm the bad guy. It's the moment when he comes out of the back of the paddy wagon, you know, and steps out, and I feel like he's reborn into the world. I love it. It's just so insightful, and
you know,
I am so grateful that it's being given this kind of thinking instead of just sort of rote hack work.
Right.
Absolutely.
You got me wondering now about the autism aspect of it, just because look at the mornings he wakes up staring at the same wall and puts on the same.
It's all about patterns.
Cufflinks. Yeah, it's all about patterns for him.
The artwork is, the iconography is amazing.
Yeah. So, huh. I'm going to have to look more into that. That might be interesting to explore that.
This is a really great example of Marvel kind of taking a property and making I would say this is the closest thing that they would ever make to a DC Marvel movie. If in the way of tone,
it's gritty.
It is. It's realistic. It's gritty. No one would ever consider it a lighthearted romp.
Right.
But at the same time, there's still humor. There's still good feelings to be had in it. There's a lot of depth and a lot of variety when it comes to the tone of the piece. And it's something that, that DC they are just tone deaf on. They don't know how to give it any life. It's just, oh man, it's just constantly a downer. And this is not. It has moments of lightness, especially I think Foggy Nelson is like the gooey, marshmallowy heart of this thing. He's a beautiful human being, and he's such a joy. That character would not exist in a DC property.
Yeah, well, actually, reading the comics of Daredevil, I always thought of Foggy Nelson as a smarter Jimmy Olsen. That's the way I always looked at him whenever I read the comics. It's like the job of Jimmy Olsen, but at the same time, he's got a lot more intellect and a lot more going on behind those eyes.
Yeah.
Well, he's just got so much heart, and he cares so much, and he just brings so much to this world. He's such an anchor to Matt Murdock. He grounds him in humanity.
Yeah.
Talking about actors in this, one of the things I remember a lot of people, and I think maybe some of us, I'm not going to name any names, but I'm thinking some of us even, I might even have said something, but jumped in a chance to say, Charlie Cox is Daredevil? I don't see it. And I heard that a lot when they announced the casting. Now it's like, I can't see anyone else as Daredevil, really.
Yeah.
But I got to jump in here and blow my own horn here, so to speak, and say that I, back in that conversation, because I had seen him in the Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw, you know, I recognized as soon as he came on screen that he was a very talented actor. And so as soon as I heard he was cast, I actually had a positive reaction to that.
Okay.
I remember that. I called it.
I think I might have, you know, said, well, I just don't see Daredevil in him. But not, like, again, I've I'm a one complete 180 on this, because what I may have felt before, no, he's Daredevil. I can't see anyone else as it.
Oh, he did a fantastic job.
Yeah. Just hoping he can pull it off in the red costume as well.
And I have to say, one of the nice things about this, when they were in having flashbacks to when they were in college, they legitimately looked like college students.
I know,
like,
right?
And acted like them.
Yeah. They looked so much younger. I mean, wow. Yeah, you're right.
They really did. That was astounding. It's so rare that you can have a younger version of a character and have the same actor play it and have it not look like we are just heavily made up and wearing wigs.
Yeah, it was in and Foggy's hair, man. Loved it.
So great.
You know, in the flashback. That was great.
That was fantastic.
I think that was my hair back in college.
Kind of was, actually. Yeah.
I think it was.
But, you know, this show, really, give it to Marvel, man. It's they took the gritty urban vigilante thing, which I was skeptical about it even ever being done again because it feels so played out. And they took it a quantum leap forward by injecting real heart into it, real humor, and making you honestly care about what's happening. It's not just, you know, machismo and posturing, you know, and again, making the pain and the hits feel real, you know, like the fighting, just to go back to that, like after watching the fights in this, especially that hallway fight, you know, it makes the overly choreographed stuff on Arrow look like sparkle magic. You know, I question your dedication to sparkle magic, but
Donnie Darko, for anyone wondering.
It was really difficult to watch The Flash after this. I have to say, I had already seen the first 5 episodes of The Flash, and I thought, oh, this is really fun. It's a great little comic book series. It's lighthearted. It's fluffy. It's great fun. And then I watched Daredevil and came back to Flash, and I was like, oh, man, this is not good.
Well, that's what we're going to have to call an end to the podcast here pretty quick, so we'll have to do the Flash next time around, so we'll have to do this pretty soon. But I do want to throw in that I was going back and forth between watching episodes of The Flash and Daredevil, catching up on The Flash, and I didn't mainline Daredevil like I probably should have. But anyway, going back and forth, it was like day and night, I mean, at times. At first, I thought, I like The Flash because it was DC's, well, I'll put it this way, it's DC's best attempt at putting a comic book on TV or film. And but looking at Marvel, I've got all the Marvel universe to compare to. Daredevil still is just rocked, and so going back and forth, I'd like, oh, Daredevil, awesome, oh, The Flash, cool. And then after a while, it got to be, I think I will go back to Daredevil. I'll hold that Flash for later. You know.
Yeah,
so it's like,
I'll give him credit. It is really a comic book on screen. It's the most, I think Tim Coker, you said something about it being the most comic book TV show out there, and it's probably true.
There is an action beat at the end of the season, or near the end of the season finale, and Gil, get your beep button ready, or your bleep that button.
Okay.
But there is an action beat at the climax of the season finale that is comic book as fuck. And like, you guys will know, and I'm really glad that we're actually going to record about The Flash next week, because Matt's, and that'll give you time to finish the season, and hopefully you too, Gil.
Oh yeah.
Because
I'll work on it.
I started out really ragging on The Flash, as you guys may remember. Mm-hmm. And next week I will be apologizing to the showrunners of Flash, because while it's not perfect, and I'm going to agree with every complaint Tim Matson voices, I feel that in the back half of the season, they won me over just by not shying away from the source material and putting it on screen and making it look great.
I see a lot of possibilities, but man, they're going to have to work really hard because it's...
Because Iris West is the worst.
Oh, she is the worst. Jesus Christ.
She's the worst character in any superhero show I've ever seen.
Well,
wow.
Don't her and Barry get together and create Wally West and get another Flash? Hopefully. Anyway, let's see here. Well, yeah, we're going to save that. Tim, how many episodes do you have left of The Flash?
I'm on episode 10 now.
Okay. I think you and I are about the same place. So, okay.
So basically, I got 13 left to go.
I think it's about right, because I got a lot of them left. So, okay, well, I'm going to make it a point to finish those up. I'll finish the last 2 episodes of Daredevil just so I can find out about this red costume thing. And so, yeah, let's do that next week. We'll talk about it, and we'll let Tim Coker lead the roust with talking
lead
about the
defense.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't think he's going to defend much.
One piece of advice I give you guys is when they start doing like piano music time at CC Jitters, you know, or in the living room at Joe's house or whatever, feel free to fast forward because that stuff's all garbage. But,
okay. All right.
But and there is a lot of it.
There's so much.
You know,
Oh, man.
And Irish
just like, I'm reading a J. Michael Straczynski comic, I will sometimes just flip past some of the dialogue or scan over it because it's so overwritten and pretentious. Uh-huh. And I don't mean to rag on JMS, hero of mine, whatever, but Superman Grounded is the worst. But so I'm saying don't feel guilty about skipping over that stuff if you want to savor the better stuff. Okay. Might help you get through those 13 episodes because that's a tall order.
I will actually fess up. I did actually have my iPad out and was playing a game while some of this was going on. I couldn't give it my full attention.
I play my Ultimate Spider-Man game on my Android whenever I'm watching Flash, but I don't play it at all. It's not even in my hand when I'm watching the Daredevil, so that says something there. I think Tim, you and I,
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like we did for these current Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can build your website in as little as 7 days free. Plus, we'll promote it on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing. If after 30 days you're happy, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call right now and you'll also get a free .com or .net domain name for your new website powered by VeriSign, the world's leading domain name provider.
Call 800-824-5131 or go to web.com/radio. That's 800-824-5131.
No upfront charge for site build, after which ongoing fees apply. Rights to site are relinquished when canceled. Domain included during active service, after which fees apply.
Nerd Up Podcast.
All right, well, let's wrap up this podcast. First of all, I want to talk about one final thing. I meant to get to it earlier. NerdCon 2015 coming up here in Robinson, Illinois Community Center. Holy cow, guys. You ought to see all the stuff we've got going. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have room for all the vendors. I really don't. And we got the biggest building in town. So we're going to see what we can
do.
The
IGA?
Do what?
The IGA?
No. Actually, the IGA is now a county market. But anyway.
Whatever.
Anyway, but yeah, we've got comic book artists like you wouldn't believe, a lot of local artists. We've got cosplayers. We're going to have a Smash Brothers Wii U tournament, and they're going to get about, I think, up to $100 prizes in that tournament. Let's see. We're also going to have all sorts of gaming going on, all sorts of magic. There's going to be some tutorials on role-playing games, and there's going to be lots of demos going on. Like I said, we've got Philo Barnhart, the guy that created the artwork for The Little Mermaid. He's going to be here. Disney animator. He's also worked on Secrets of Nim and a couple of other pieces of Disney work. We've also got Charles Moisant. I think he's from up your area, Tim, somewhere around Chicago anyway. Somewhere north of where I am. Anyway, he's got a line of comics that he did a Kickstarter for and got his own publishing company. Some zombie comics, and there's a few others, but the zombie one stuck out with me because I like to see zombies. Anyway, so that Charles Moisant. We got our very own Michael Kaysinger. He's actually coordinating the event. He's one of the comic book artists from around here. He's constantly attending cons as an artist. He was up at C2E2 just recently, and we brought him in as a coordinator for this event, and it's just boomed ever since. It's just going to be amazing. 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday, July 11th, Robinson, Illinois Community Center. Tickets are only $5. $5 and all this fun.
$5?
You can get
what
that.
What a bargain.
What a bargain and half the price. We've got, $5 gets you in. All the stuff you can do the cosplay costs nothing to enter. Now, there are some Magic the Gathering tournaments that have to have an entry fee. It's part of the regulations or something. But there's going to be a Pokemon tournament. But, we got all sorts of fun stuff. Plus, like I said, artists galore. And it's just going to be phenomenal. If you want to come and get a head sketch from every artist here, you're going to get a lot of them because I think we got about 20 artists altogether. July 11th, Saturday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Here's the website. It's a little bit of it's a free website because, hey, we don't have a budget. GIL510.wix.com/nerdcon. check out the website. We've got the schedule on there. You can also prepay for your tickets, or if you want to get a vendor booth, you better get in soon because I think we're running out of space for those. So get in on that at that website, and I'll put a link on the Nerd Up Podcast website as well. So come on down, have some fun. It's worth it. Everything nerdy. There's going to be all sorts of comic books for sale. In fact, Tim Coker, I saw a guy that's going to be there setting up a booth, just recently bought an estate sale of comic books, and he's got 5 long boxes full of Fantastic Four comics only.
Oh, baby.
So just letting you know, it's there.
Nice.
Anyway, so that's coming up. So I guess that ends the podcast. Don't forget, go to nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. That's the home of the Nerd Up Podcast. We've got all sorts of links. You can get T-shirts. We've got 2 T-shirt stores now. There's one at Sell My Tees. It's nerduppodcast.sellmytees.com. Or you can go to Cafe Press, cafepress.com/nerduppodcast. Buy this beautiful artwork created by our very own Tim Coker that just looks wonderful. It does.
It Aww. Is.
You got a coffee mug, don't you, Tim Matson?
I do. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah. And
it really does. Tim Coker's art is fantastic.
Yeah, and Isaac's got that backpack. Awesome. All his friends, every time he takes it somewhere, hey, what is that? Where'd you get that? So, again, cool. So, yeah, buy our stuff, and it helps support the podcast. You know, basically pays for the storage space that we use all these audio files on. So, anyway, I'm done here. I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can retweet me at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley at Eric Bill.
Tim Coker at Tim K. Has to Say.
And bringing up the rear, Tim Matson at Tim Gone Mad.
And as always,
stay nerdy.
Damn it.
Have you heard? Proactiv Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a 1,000,000 bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call, because we're going to let 1,000,000 people try Proactiv Plus risk-free and get 2 free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Plus, 2 free extras, and free shipping. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait.
800-489-1397. 800-489-1397. 800-489-1397. That's 800-489-1397.